Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And do we have any news? No, I don't think we have much news, do we?
No news.
Just getting on with it?
Just doing it.
All right, let's get on with it. So today's book is called... Ink Blood Sister Scribe. Ink Blood Sister Scribe.
Ink Blood Sister Scribe.
And it's by
Scribe.
Emma Touras. And I'm just going by the audiobook narrator's pronunciation of that name. But it's a T-U-R-Z-S.
Oh, it's like an U?
Like an umlaut O thing there.
Touras.
So yeah, this is like a fantasy, kind of like urban fantasy style book.
How did you get to that one?
Okay, so here's the thing. Probably, well, the reason why I read it, like the most immediate reason I read it is that I went into my Goodreads to read list.
Okay.
And searched for average rating of all Goodreads declining reviews. That means the highest rated books are at the top by other people's rating, like by the average community rating.
Yeah.
And the lowest go down to the bottom. And this was on there and it had a pretty good rating of 4.04. stars.
That's pretty good.
So right in the middle of like, is this book worth reading? It's over 4 stars on average. It's in my to read list. There must have been a reason I added this to this my to read list.
This book does not feel like this is one that you would just randomly put on there.
So what it was probably I was listening to, as I do, listen to other podcasts like the Incomparable podcast, and they have the book club and they always have the what else are we reading.
Yeah.
And probably somebody mentioned this and I was like, you know, or you know, I look through the because they always have them listed in the podcast notes, you know.
Yeah.
Like when you look in the notes it says also reading and it'll say the name of the host and then other books they're reading.
Okay, okay.
So it's quite easy to find that, and I would probably just added it with some of the books from one of those podcasts.
Yeah.
But then when I started listening to this audiobook, I was straight away thinking, there are lesbians here and wizards. And I was like, oh, so maybe it was the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast, which I have listened to a number of episodes of. Because just to introduce that podcast, somebody mentioned about my review of Amatka in the SFBRP listener group, where there was a thread made about that and said, hey, what about this? You know, and someone said, what about that? And then someone said, oh, on this podcast, the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast, they were talking about how the character is, you know, sort of like there's a reading of it that the main character in Amatka is on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
And then so I went over and listened to their podcast, and it convinced me, their podcast convinced me that yes, it definitely is that, and my reading of the novel was incorrect. However, if that is the reading of the novel Amatka, I have many other major issues which I had when I was listening to the audiobook.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this person obviously has, you know, obsessive compulsive, they have, you know, these other kind of, you know, different things. But then I was like, oh, is this person just not reading the room, or are they on the autistic spectrum and incapable of reading the room or whatever like that? But then if that is the case, then there's nothing else in their life. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into it. We discussed it among ourselves a few times about that. And we even started trying to listen to Amatka again on that road trip that we did.
Yeah,
and I was like, hey, let's put it on. And I started listening to it and I was like, oh no, I remembered why I didn't enjoy this book very much.
Yeah.
Because the world building is so great. But actually the core of the main character, I found it badly written. And I now, again, like I say, now I do believe that the core of that book, there is a autism spectrum reading of that book. However, that makes me feel worse about the character and worse about the decisions and worse about the world building and worse about the society rather than better about it.
Well, that's not a good feeling.
No, it isn't.
So
and that's why
we didn't continue it.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's why I rejected that reading in the first place. I was like, surely this can't be what this book is saying.
Yeah.
But like I say, I listened to this other podcast, the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast, and they convinced me that was the reading, but that made me enjoy it. Feel it was flawed in other ways.
Okay.
However, it's a fun podcast. So I listen to that episode. I listen to some whenever new podcasts come out, if it's books. And I listen to, you know, like a few of the podcasts of books that I'd read.
Right. Okay.
You know,
so they
I mean.
They reviewed books that you've
Well, no, they don't
read.
Review books.
No?
This is the good thing about this podcast, and that I wish so many other podcasts, I wish there was lots of other podcasts like this, which is like our podcast, which each episode is a single book and you're not having to like work out which book it is.
Yeah.
Every episode, I brought up their whatever their Libsyn feed here as well. Every episode is named after the title of the book. I wish they would put the author in the description, even if they're not going to put it in there. But like you see, you can look down here as well. The Saint of Bright Doors, These Burning Stars, you know. So it's just sort of like, and they have some bonus episodes as well, which I listened to a few of those. It's like a proper discussion. So there is a review, like we do a review in these books. I call this a book review podcast.
Short
ones, it's often a review, which I always think a review is, should you read this or not? And they often do that at the start of the podcast, but then they get into, what they call the spoiler zone, what I call the meaty discussion part where you can talk about anything you want about a book.
Like a topical discussion that...
No, not so much topical, but just an in-depth discussion.
Yes, yeah. That takes the book as the hanger of the topic and that gets into a discussion.
No, when we say topical, that doesn't mean we're talking about a topic. That means we're talking about something in the news or recently or right now. That's what topical means.
Okay.
So topical humor means references to current events.
Okay.
So it's not quite the right word. Either way, in-depth discussion. And then so I was like, oh, maybe this is where this podcast, like where they mentioned this book or I saw it listed. But I searched for their thing and it's not in there. So they haven't done a review of this.
Okay.
But maybe it was mentioned. Maybe it was mentioned in a different episode. So I don't know.
Do you think they should read it?
Look, there is no book more wizards versus lesbians than this book. It's literally starts off and there's wizards and lesbians. Like it's like they will. I'm sure they'll get to it at some point.
Okay. When is it from that book?
Last year. Ink Blood Sister Scribe. It was nominated for the best fantasy. A nominee for Best Debut Novel on the Goodreads Choice Awards. Oh, so maybe that's where I saw it. Maybe it was just listed on the Goodreads Choice Awards. Can I click on this? Which one won the book? Hellbent won the Best Fantasy Book, and this had 6,895 votes for Best Fantasy Novel from last year.
Okay.
That's probably not where I saw it then, because I wouldn't have picked out the 17th best fantasy no sorry the 13th best fantasy novel from last year on Goodreads. That wouldn't have been the reason I read it. So anyway, let's get into this. I made some notes.
Yeah,
should we have a look at my notes?
Let's go have a look.
Actually, let me just set up the world here. It's our world, but you know, as urban fantasy is, there's secret magic going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always about someone in the world, but they don't know there's magic, and then they discover, oh, there is magic, and then we do that. However, this book is told almost completely from the point of view who people already know that there's magic exists.
Okay.
It's two sisters, and they are kind of separated out. One of them's living in Vermont somewhere and in a house with lots of magic books, and she's looking after the magic books, and she uses the magic from the magic books to look after the magic books.
Okay.
And her sister, who can't do magic, was kind of kicked out the house like a decade ago, and now she's living in Antarctica because she's always on the run from other magic people who are trying to track down magic people.
Okay, but she isn't magic.
No, she's not magic. Magic doesn't affect her in any way.
Okay.
Which meant that it's explained later on that the father said, if you, again, mild spoilers, but the reason why she left home isn't because she wanted to abandon a family, is that her father said, if you stay here because the magic doesn't affect you, anyone who wants to track us down can track you down.
Okay.
Because
she's a danger to
her family. Yeah.
To the people around her.
Yeah, okay. So she's out on the road. And then, they're half sisters. They have different mothers, but the same father is the idea.
Okay, so that makes sense that one of them has it, one of them hasn't.
Yeah, so one of them is magic and one of them isn't magic.
Yeah.
And so that's where it starts off. The one in Antarctica has got a girlfriend. She's the lesbian in the wizards versus lesbians thing.
Yeah.
And then, so I was like, oh, there's a wizard. And then later on, another main character is introduced, which is another magic person who is living in a library. Well, it's not a library. It's like a manor house, big, like, castle-y kind of manor house in the south of England somewhere, which has got an even bigger collection of books, magic books that they have there. And the idea being that all these books, you read them out, or you start reading them, and if you're a magic user, you then read all the way through this book, and it's kind of like these like poem logic structured kind of things, and you read it through, and then magic happens in some way.
Okay.
All right. So that's it. And the idea being that there's some kind of mystery in the background of like, oh, people are trying to track down these magic people in Vermont and using the people in Antarctica and trying to, you know, it's all this kind of thing. And so there's paranoia. It's very paranoid stuff at the start of this book. Oh no, someone's here. And also there's like this mirror magic where you can pass things through mirrors.
Okay.
Like you can communicate. Like if you look into a mirror, you know, it's like the mirror on the wall and it shows you the fairest of them all. And then not only that, you can pass inanimate objects through the mirror.
Okay.
So that's kind of set up for it. And started reading, and it's and it was okay, and then it got a bit exciting, and then it got a bit long and a bit boring.
Okay.
So I just want to say, overall, I thought the book was fine, like solid 2.5 stars. Is that like, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, I'm getting through this, no problem at all. It wasn't like I wasn't like not enjoying it.
Okay.
But I did have some issues with it.
Was it cozy?
It, not really. Well, again, it's this kind of thing. The vibe of the novel feels to me like it's trying to be a little bit edgy, but also isn't edgy enough. And it's trying to be grown up, like not young adult.
Yeah.
And it isn't, young adult. Okay. Definitely isn't young adult. But there's not really enough there to make it interesting.
Right.
And then it's trying to be a romance, but then there isn't quite enough romance. And then it's trying to be like action and like a thrillery kind of stuff. And with a bit of like horror kind of stuff, but there's not really enough of that. And then it's trying to be like, oh, conspiracy intrigue, you know, like what's going on here? Not quite enough of that. And then it's like, oh, heist kind of stuff. We've got to do the heisty kind of, but then that doesn't really go anywhere. So all the way through, it feels like this novel isn't quite sure what it wants to be.
Okay.
Never really hits any high peaks of anything.
Yeah.
And never really says anything or gets to anything. But the vibe is good because the vibe is like people who are isolated from each other.
Yeah.
So if you're like, oh, this is a book about being isolated from your family. Well, one person's in North America and one person's in fucking Antarctica. Oh,
as
and this person's isolated.
Where's
he isolated? Well, he's locked up in a room and the only people he sees around him, like his thing starts off like, oh, I wish I had friends. Like, well, I'll be your friend. It's like, no, you're paid to be here. You're like my bodyguard. And this other person, I was like, oh, well, I'll be your companion. It's like, yeah, but you're my tutor. Like, I need to be, like, I need to have contact with people who aren't paid to be
around
to be around me.
Yeah.
And one of the sisters, like, well, down in Antarctica, trying to make connections with a very, very, very small amount of people around her in this Antarctic base. The other one's like going, oh, I need to make contact, but I can't. I've got to put these magic sigils around so nobody can ever find me. And she's like, this cat, I'll make friends with this cat. And the cat's not really interested. And she's like, no. So the whole book, like I say, the vibe of the book is fine. Like, the characters are okay. You know, it's all there, but it never peaked with any of these things at all.
I guess that's the difficult thing to write a book or to have a book that gets you emotionally excited and invested so much so that like there is like a you're getting like either grossed out or like frightened or
I just wanted
excited
to have any kind of interesting peak emotions with anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't getting that.
Neither direction, like neither really, and wow. And
but
yay.
No, there were moments, there was every time I was like, oh, I mean, is this worth reading? Something would come along and I'd be like, ooh, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
And then it would be there for like that one bit or that one chapter and then it would pass by and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're not doing that then, if you know what I mean. So okay. Let me go through my notes here as well. Unfortunately, this is very, very, very American.
Okay.
And let me just explain some of the reasons why it's American.
And the author is from America.
I should actually check. She's she's a writer, teacher, and occasional translator based in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm guessing, University of Montana, Missoula. And is an enthusiastic member of Clarion West class of 2017. And this is, you know, Clarion West. It's the workshop that you pay to go to.
Yep.
And that you're in with the in crowd and that you can do lots of short stories and you'll move over into novels.
Yeah.
And you'll get a novel deal. Again, nothing wrong with Clarion West. It's doing its job. It's all fine.
Yes.
All these Clarion workshops. But so, okay. There's some, the way that the world works isn't that everything is revolved around America. It's fine. There are other places mentioned in this book.
Yeah.
However, everywhere in the world is exactly either like America is, or as America, or as an American would imagine another part of the world.
Yeah.
Which is, again, that's fine. But then there's these things as well, like these weird writings. I made a note of this, sort of like, oh yes, my grandfather came over from Europe in a container ship in 1940. And I was like, wait a second, this is like
container
really
container ship.
Yeah. And I was like, container ship in 1940? And I was
first of all,
I know that can't be right, because I know that containerization, I mean, there were containers, like, you know, like we saw on the railway container that somebody found in Belgium. And they're like, what's this railway cart doing here? It's like, no, it was just containers, because it was an easy way to take things across the English Channel.
Yeah.
But container ships weren't
as
around
in our,
until...
what we think of container ships.
Yeah, so there were no container ships in 1940. So then it goes through different historic things that they're talking about. Oh, history here and history there. Because, you know, like these library books go back a long way. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, every single date, I was like, is this right? You know, can this thing... So like, oh, and this book is from really... is written in Aramaic from 3,000 years ago. And I'm like... Nah. No, it wasn't a book. It was like an inscription. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Aramaic from 3,000 years ago. And suddenly I'm like, wait, Aramaic. I know that was like a trade language of Babylonia or whatever it is. And I looked it up and I was like, okay, barely. There could have been Aramaic 3,000 years ago, because it goes back to like the earliest is about 900 BC. So I'm like, all right, I'll give you that one. And then it says, oh, and they had this globe from the 17th century. And then I was like, wait a second, how old do globes go back? So then I looked it up and was like, oh yes, the oldest globe that we now have is from 1499, or from like the 1490s. So that's what 15th century. So I'm like, oh, okay. So it, but it, all the time when you hear someone say, oh, came across to America on a container ship from in 1940, I'm just like, here's somebody who doesn't know enough about the world to even know that they should have done some research to find out how old container ship technology is.
You could have said literally anything on a ship. Like, why add the container
ship? Yeah, like come over on a supply ship, but
whatever.
Come over on
like
a merchant ship. Yeah.
Many ships. Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, but container ship in 1940 just immediately went, ah, this is somebody who does... Again, that's not so much an American thing. Oh, actually, I'll put aside the American stuff in America for a bit. But so some of the issues that I had early on is that there's these two sisters, and each of them are reflecting back about their pasts. Mm. And there was this weird narrative thing that they were like, oh, and then I saw her do this thing and she was really happy. But because both of them are written in third person, I was suddenly losing track about, okay, now which sister was the one who could fly with magic when she was a kid, or on a magic carpet or whatever it was, like, you know, oh, and which was the one who could do this, or which was... And sometimes those two main characters, they kind of like were like, oh no, not which one is, anyway, a bit of a like,
so even they confused it.
No, I was a little bit confused with the narrator reading the different different points of view, but then they were reflecting back against what they would do. And I'm just saying, there was a lot of, okay, she did this and then she did this and she did this. But when you're talking third person about the viewpoint character at the time, she can be a she and her sister can be a she.
Yeah, okay, I get it. And also, I guess if you ever interrupt the book for whatever time, and then you get back into she did this, she did that.
No, it was actually easy early on, because one of them was literally in Antarctica and one of them was in Vermont. So like
but if they talk about what happened in the past, at that point they weren't. So I guess that can be adding to the confusion.
Yeah, true. So what's this? So there's paranoia as well. And I was like, oh, they're all very paranoid about this, like mystery organization or some kind of underground kind of thing. And I was like, you know, this would be really good if that paranoia wasn't warranted.
Yeah.
Like, and it was actually them just being paranoid. And I thought, oh, that'd be really good. And then I was like, no, but it would be good if they thought that, but they were made to think that. So it was all of that kind of like, you know, what do you call it? Gaslighting. That's it. Yep. Another lighting fixture type of... thing here. So yes, it would be good if they were being gaslit into thinking that they shouldn't be paranoid, or they should be paranoid. But in the end, there is just a shadowy organization of people manipulating other people and trying to find them as well.
Yeah, makes sense.
So yes, an isolation. Oh yeah, I made a note of that. A magical English. Yeah, how about Antarctica for isolation?
And just so I understand, I think always, like, if somebody is like in Antarctica, there's like... Yeah. Literally at any point, at any given time, a handful of people in Antarctica. Is she like a researcher then?
She's an electrician who's working on a research base doing it. She's an electrician down there.
Okay. And because like no random person can just live in Antarctica.
No.
Like, you know, there has to be a reason that you get
there. It is a job, but most people don't want to overwinter in Antarctica, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing about like, oh, you know, I found a girlfriend here and we're going to stay on for another season. You know, that's the kind of thing. And everyone's like, yeah, great, stay on for another season, because it's hard to find people who want to, you know, live in Antarctica for the whole winter.
Yeah,
makes sense. Sounds like a good job, but actually, I'm not sure I'd do it.
Nah.
What is this thing? Okay, so the magic. Let's talk about the magic here as well. A lot of the magic is based on controlling people, controlling what they can say, what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very manipulative magic.
Okay.
In that, like, it takes away people's agency.
Right.
So, they always talk about these NDAs. So what you do is you get someone to read something out.
Yeah.
And it's an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which is, I think, a really, really fun idea in a book.
Yeah.
That you get someone to read something, and then if they can't, then they try to say that thing, they lose their voice, they can't say anything, they get uncomfortable, they start coughing, whatever it takes for them not to be able to reveal the information to another character. Now, this sounds, again, when I first came across this, I was like, oh, magical NDAs, fantastic. However, the plot of the book relies on them. One of the worst things you can do in a book, or something that's really annoying that you read in a book, is when there's a character who doesn't know what's going on, and there's another character who does know what's going on, and they have conversations, and the character who does know what's going on never tells our viewpoint character what's going on.
Yeah.
And so it's withheld from us as the reader.
Right.
And it's always really disappointing. And I've literally complained about this in books before, where there's a conversation where a character will say, ah, yes, I know all about your father, but that's a story from another time, for another time. And then you go off and then you don't hear it. And then like three chapters before the end is like, let me tell you about your father. And you're like, well, you just, like, if you'd have just had that conversation at the start of the book, like, that would have removed a whole load of drama and wondering and questioning, you know?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You don't like need to do it.
The timing of when and how information is revealed
is just arbitrary for when the author of the book decides the main character needs to find something out or be satisfying to find them out. Another character will just tell them. And you're like, well, if they knew that all along, why didn't they say it before? So, again, this NDA thing seems really interesting.
Yeah.
Because they can't just tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah.
But it means that 90% of this book is our main characters not knowing what's going on and then just discovering, oh, wait a second, this person's got an NDA. Well, let's cancel the NDA and then they'll tell us what to go on.
Oh, they can cancel it.
Yeah, you just read out the opposite spell.
Okay.
Or whatever. Or the person who wrote the initial spell can then, you know, cancel it or whatever.
Right.
And so...
but then that's meaningless.
Well, it's not meaningless, but it's like it's one step removed from characters deciding not to tell anybody else.
Yeah.
It's the main character deciding that they want to find out about something.
Yes.
And so I made a note here, which is, what did these viewpoint characters actually do? ? They got moved around and manipulated by others who knew more and had actual goals. Everything in this book was set up by other people who weren't our three main viewpoint characters. The parents of them, the tutors of them, the bodyguards of them. Everybody else in the book knew more about what was happening, knew the history of these characters, knew everything about them, knew what their motivation, like what their own motivations were. They all had plans. Everybody knew everything. They were all connected better than these people.
Yeah.
But none of them could tell our main characters their own backstories.
And still, we spend the time
spend the time with three characters who aren't quite sure what's going on, and they are just being literally moved around by people who do know what's going on but can't tell them what's going on.
Yeah.
Because they have NDAs, or because, you know, they want to be mysterious about it.
Okay.
Whatever. They want to try this thing out. And it really reminded me of that part in the book, the Oxford translators, Babel, it was.
Yeah.
Babel? Yeah.
Yeah.
Babel.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, and now let me tell you about this earlier, like 10 years before, older brother of the main characters, his time at university. And there was like this cool love triangle, oh, weird love triangle, which was like obliquely mentioned. They're like, ah, yes. And the most important thing you in our main character's life is this thing that your brother did with these other people ages ago. And I'm like, well, why don't we, like, why isn't that the story that I'm reading here?
Yeah.
And again, don't want to get too much into spoilers, but what happens here is that we discover that the parents of our main characters, all of the parents of our main characters, all had a more interesting story where they decided on things and they made decisions and they did things and accomplished things.
Ha.
And our main characters, the three main characters in this book,
yeah.
There is no cool love triangle.
Yeah.
There is no cool backstory. None of them actually make any decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the main decision that our main characters make is they've been manipulated into something and then they're like, hey, we're being manipulated into this. Shall we go through with it or not?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, let's go along with the manipulation. And they will go along with it. And then everything else happens exactly as the previous generation of people who wanted to manipulate that thing happened into happening. It happened.
Right.
So the whole book, and this is let me quickly look on Audible here. This is a 14 hour book, 13 hours and 53 minute book. And in this book, our main characters make around about 2.5 decisions each.
Okay.
They actually decide to do. Otherwise, they are literally continuing on with the programming of other people in the previous generation, or other people who are older than them, or other people who already know more about the situation than they do.
They are continuing? Who?
Our three main characters are just playing out the programming instructions of other people.
That other people gave them.
Yeah, literally gave them, otherwise manipulated them into it, or otherwise our three main characters,
have
no agency of their own and are just accomplishing the goals or continuing on along the paths that their parents or other older people who knew more set them onto.
Okay, and that stays like that until the end. They don't get like, they don't free themselves or like there's like an evolution of like, you know, you get out of the cycle or whatever. And that's interesting. How old is the author?
I don't care.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Well,
like, there's no reason. Look, here's a picture of her. She's probably mid-30s or something like that. Yeah,
because to be honest, I keep coming back to this kind of generational differences here, but that sounds so much like a millennial writing a book.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It is when it's easy to say, oh, it's a book about generational change and it's a book about confronting your parents. Every single book like that has to be about somebody either deciding not to just carry on with their parents' plans or examining what their parents did, like rebelling and then coming back to it and going, yes, I will continue. Like, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
Some sort of
development. It can't just be about people noodling and on for about literally 85% of the book and then being, well, I guess we'll just carry on then. And then going, yeah, well, I guess that worked. And it's like, yes, all your parents' plans worked. It's not all about parents, but it's about, you know, previous generations or other people who, and it's, when you actually get to the book, you're like, oh, individually I was enjoying all of these stages of this book, but if that's what the book is about, like if that's actually what they do, honestly, it got to the point where I was like, you keep telling me the backstory of your parents, why aren't we just spending
I want that story,
because somebody, one of the half sisters' mothers is still alive, or is still, you know, is still present, but she's like left the family home in Vermont, but is still living nearby, and she goes and have conversations with them, and I was like, oh well, just tell us what's going. And then it was like, oh yeah, the magical NDA means that her mother can't tell her the full story, even though people's lives are in danger.
But it's then later revealed that you can cancel the NDAs.
But if you don't know that,
you don't know that, you're trying your best to make it happen.
What happens is, what they actually accomplish, what our three main characters actually accomplish, is slowly come to realize that other people around them know more than them, and they just need to work out who to ask.
Okay.
That's it. That's what they accomplish.
Right.
And everything else that they accomplish in the book has been set up or is actually being accomplished by other people around them.
Yeah.
Who are manipulating them.
Oh, yeah. That feels so like the millennial experience. Okay. I know it's weird, but that is like the description of that generation, really.
Okay,
it's
if you
crazy.
So.
Yeah, right, it is.
Fellow, hello, millennial over there. What is the point of magic? Okay, here's the point of magic.
In general or in this book?
In this book. What does magic do? Or put it this way, when people discover they have magical abilities, what do they use them to do?
Make their lives better?
Actually, no.
Make other people's lives better?
If they pay them to. Some of them do.
Ah, okay.
But here's the thing.
Make people's lives worse?
Sometimes. Here's the thing. All of the magic in this book mm-hmm. is about the magic in this book and the books and the magical books in the book. So if you want to protect yourself from something, what are you doing? I'm actually protecting these books from other people who want these books and will do bad things to get these books.
Right.
But why do those people want those books? Well, those people want those books because they want those books to put in with their books. And then what are those books used for? Well, these other books are used for... So actually, every single bit of magic in the novel is about people wanting the books for the sake of wanting the books.
Mm.
And everybody who wants power in this story
yeah.
wants power because they want power, and the books are like a proxy for wanting the books.
Okay. So it revolves around books.
To the point where I was like, what's... I want to see cool magic stuff
yeah.
where cool magic stuff happens. But even at the start of the book, where there's some cool mirror magic and some other bits of stuff, that's all just to... Well... It was just a means to an end for someone to find the people who have the books.
Okay.
And all the way, and all of the magic, like, oh, we're going to protect these books. We're going to block your memory, or your not your memory. We're going to, yeah, either block your memory, or we're going to give you an NDA so you can't tell other people about the books. So it's like this self-perpetuating book thing. And in the end, there's only one thing at the end, which is the classic wizard, I want to live forever, you know, like the immortality spell.
Right. Yeah.
And in the end, you're just sort of like, well, somebody wants to do an immortality spell, and you're like, oh, that's it. And it's like, you know, again, listening to some of these Wizards versus Aliens podcasts, it always comes down to the main wizard, the big wizard.
Wizard versus Aliens.
No, Wizards versus...
lesbians.
I'm thinking Monsters versus Aliens, the movie. Wizards versus Lesbians.
Yeah.
It so often comes down to the main wizard wants to live forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a good
trope. Or does live forever. You know, yeah. they're the person controlling the information and controlling the power. They're the thing behind the throne, you know,
yeah,
all the time.
The patriarch.
No, they're kind of like a mega patriarch.
Yeah, yeah.
If you know what I mean. Yeah. It's not just patriarch, yeah. but like unending patriarch.
And with these kind of stories, I'm always wondering, there must have been, like, if there's magic in the world existing, and magic could literally improve the lives of all human on Earth, why is it being kept secret? And
how about you keep it secret so you can live in a manor house and have like loads and loads and loads and loads of money?
So it's a...
Doesn't that feel good? Live forever and be really, really rich?
No, that doesn't. It doesn't.
But that's it. That's the motivation behind the main wizard.
So you want to keep it elite and literally gaslight the world from the magic so that you can keep it? That's so selfish.
Yeah, here's the thing. And this is what I was really disappointed with this book in the ending, like story-wise, is that the magic was for magic was for magic. The books were for books were for books. The people were just there.
Mm.
And tell you what, I'm not recommending this book.
Okay.
I'm not recommending that anyone read this book.
Right.
But let's just do some spoilers at the end. Or okay. just say the kind of thing at the end here.
Okay, spoilers.
At the end, what people get is power. And I've complained about this so much. And this is, does a fish know it's wet? Does a fish know that it's... Does a fish know what water is?
Probably not.
Probably not. And this is the thing. There's a whole generation now of American authors who, like I say, it's so American that they don't even understand that at the end of a book, what they think is a happy ending for, like, I wouldn't say everyone else in the world, but it's like, it's just so American. Like, it's just so, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's like neoliberal power for power. So, yeah. You know, I've talked about this times. Like, yeah. So at the end of this, first of all, everyone gets their magical abilities. It turns out every single character that we spend any time with at all and has got even got a name, except one person who's off to the side, doesn't really matter,
yeah,
actually does have magical abilities of some
so
kind.
So even the person who was told the whole life, they don't have magical abilities.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's pretty obvious. In fact, almost There's only one thing that's mentioned in this book, which turned out to be a twist. Mm. And it wasn't even a twist. It was just something that I thought was being set up for a twist, and then it wasn't a twist, which was the cat who kept coming in. I was like, okay, when are we going to find out that the cat has got
something
with the cat? Like, the cat
the
is
cat
away
can
past
speak,
the...
of course.
Oh, the cat. Yeah, and I was like, come on, the cat. The cat's obviously going to be the most... And then at the end of the book, like, the cat's not mentioned. I was like, but you were talking about... The cat was there. Why did it... But literally every other twist came along.
Yeah.
Like, every other thing. I've even mentioned them that actually, you know, somebody wants to live forever, all this different kind of... So none of it was actually surprising to me. Except for how unsurprising it was. You know what I mean? So I already knew that there was no way that one of our main characters wasn't going to have some kind of magical power.
Yeah.
So at the end, everyone has a magical power. Mm-hmm. They defeat the wizard.
Mm-hmm.
And just take over that the power of the wizard.
Yeah. And then what do they do with that?
Now they are the ones with unlimited power, unlimited money,
and
own a manor house in England full of magical books.
Share it with the world.
Nah.
Oh.
The thing is, it doesn't matter. Oh. What's happened is the happy end of this book is literally for everybody else in the entire world who isn't magic and rich, nothing's changed. There isn't sort of like anything bad that can happen to the world. That nothing is bad. Like, it's always a bit annoying that, like, oh, and this person has got to save the world from an evil. They've got to do this. For, like, we've got to save anybody. No. Everything is so insular down to this is a book about people who use magic to use magic to use magic, who write books to write books to write books, who protect books to protect books to protect books, who want power to have power to have power.
Mm.
It's so insular that at the end of the book, literally nothing has changed in the world except that they defeated an old guy, an old white guy, an old white British guy, and now a young lesbian is the most powerful person, or whatever it's going to be, if you know what I mean. Like, the only thing that changes is the people who we are the protagonists, because of course they're the protagonists, because they're the people who, I don't know, are most like the author of the book, or like most, you understand what I'm saying? Who are like the most American people, and the quirky American view of what a British person should look like.
Yeah.
And the guy from, you know, Boston, and the girl from Vermont, and the girl from Mexico, or who was born in Mexico, or whatever it's going to be. Like, it doesn't even matter. But what happens is everything stays the same.
Yeah.
Every power structure stays the same.
Yeah.
But our favorite person is now in charge, and now is the person who does that.
Okay.
And you're like, ah, and that's better because the wizard was a white old guy.
Yeah.
And now somebody else has exactly the same power with the whole lack of controls and everything about that, which is still sinister. And the thing that they were like afraid of was sort of like, oh, this person's dangerous. Mm. That person might kill someone to get what he wants. Guess what they do?
They killed someone.
They killed someone to get their one. And I'm like, you're the same. Like, nothing's changed.
Okay.
If you know what I mean?
This is interesting.
And I'm not saying that this is American or American politics. I'm just saying, like, it's just a vibe of these books that at the end, everyone gets rich. Everyone gets all the magical powers.
Yeah.
They just take over the power that existed before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And suddenly that's better because now they have the power. And not often it's the evil corporation in science fiction.
Yeah.
And if it's in, you know, this fantasy, it's like the mysterious magic, you know, or the conspiracy, magical, the secret magical cabal or something.
Yeah.
But at the end of all these books, the happy ending is, everything stays exactly the same, but the person in charge of the corporation is now younger and less male and white, or whatever, you know, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, that's it. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah.
And this happens so many times. Like, even books that I enjoy, you know, like that Blackfish City or something like that, which is something in the Arctic, and the people have, like, got, you know, like polar bears as familiars and orcas or whatever. Like, and it's all really great. But in the end, I'm like, oh, you've just done the same thing again. Mm. That, like, oh, you get the power. Everyone has magic. Everyone in the family is special. Everyone is just chosen and special and stuff. And at the end, oh, everyone, life is the same for every single other person in this book, except our people over there have got the American dream that they're no longer working class or middle class. Now they're in the upper echelons of society. They have access to the power and money and wealth, and, you know, they can do what they want. But everything is exactly the same for the rest of the world. And I'm like, these books are just, you know, neoliberal power fantasy American dream stereotypes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that there's a lesbian or there's representation in there, because all I feel is icky about it at the end.
Yeah, I understand. I have 2 points here.
Yeah.
I think in the end it feels like basically every American author secretly wants basic universal income to just, you know, have the money and do what you want. And the second one is we recently rewatched The Rules for Rulers by C.G.B. Gray. And it's fantastic because it fits to this narrative, because you are a benevolent, really good person. You want to change things. Yeah. And then you become the ruler. And then it turns out you have to do exactly what the other rulers have to do.
Yeah.
So in the end, yes, you might be the benevolent, cool dictator, but you still have to give the supporters the money.
The Goblin Emperor or something, when I was reading that, I was like, oh, so in the end, they do exactly all the kind of things.
Because that's in the
end. They keep doing the same thing. They're bad for everyone, but the person is a goblin instead of a fairy, which was a very like ham-fisted way of saying, oh, you know, what if what if Barack Obama, he was just another president, he was black, but in the end he was working within the same power system as everyone else or whatever,
and you didn't have to make
just as bad for everyone
make these decisions, and everybody always looks at the powerful people and say, oh, why are they making these decisions, that doesn't make any sense. But if you then look at the system they're in, it all makes sense. And if you then get there, you will do just the same.
Well, it's not just about doing just the same. It's just that, like, oh, I don't know. Again, it comes back down to this thing, which, again, it's very a very different kind of idea, which is when I was reading that Night's Dawn trilogy by Peter F. Hamilton.
Yeah.
And the whole book, the whole trilogy is who should wield the power to get us out of this bad situation.
Yeah.
And our main character wields the power to get out of it and then immediately gives up the power, makes sure that nobody else can have that power in the future, and then goes off to this backward planet and gets into local politics and starts campaigning for women's rights or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mostly because his hot girlfriend is there. But either way, like... He goes off on all the sex adventures, and then he goes off on the growing up adventures, and then he goes on and it's just I don't think I've ever read a book by one of these new generation, like this last 15-year generation of American authors who have ever had anyone get to the end of a book and they don't become more powerful in a way that they just replace the power that exists beforehand. But they're not white and male, so it's good. Or that they replace an old white guy, so it's good.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, it's just the vibe, and it just gets tiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
And I don't mind happy endings, but what so many American authors think of as a happy ending, all I'm thinking of is, wait, so... They didn't accomplish anything. It's like Game of Thrones-ing out. Actually, I've never seen Game of Thrones. But like, I don't care who ends up in charge of a corporation or of a kingdom.
Yeah.
Like, who is in charge isn't interesting for me.
Yeah.
You know, how they change the world or how they change themselves or whatever. But now I am the one in charge. How did you do that? By defeating the evil. And what are you now?
Did you get there?
I'm like... On the same, I'm way, like, it's impossible for me in this system that's been set up to be anything not near the same end of the spectrum, but I'm slightly, I have different identity politics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, and that's what's disappointing about this book. And that's why this book's getting like 2 stars or whatever.
Okay. Even though it's going down. You said 2.5 before.
It started off and I'm like, oh, great, 3-star book. But like I say, when I was getting to the end, I was like 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
And maybe it, like, by the time I'm finished, because it kind of left an annoying taste in my mouth. But then here's the thing. We were watching that Map Men video. Again, all we're doing now is referencing YouTube videos we watched over the last few days.
Yeah.
And they're saying, how many countries are there? And at the end of them, one of them...
It depends.
One of them is saying, but in this increasingly, you know, online world and interconnected world, countries matter less and less. And, you know, we shouldn't worry about borders and shouldn't worry about flags. And, you know, we should all live together as one. And Jay's like, I can still fly my England flag, can't I? Yeah, it's like and so in the end, it's going to be like, countries are for sports more than actual...
Like for identifying to a group of people.
Yeah, but in the end, that doesn't matter, except that you want a sports team to root for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in the EU, that's what you've been saying. Anyway, put all this. So he went into this kind of like, the end. And I said, that reminds me of the end of this book. Now, it's not exactly like that. But what happens is this whole book, all the way through, nothing ever happens to make me think that there should be a message at the end of the book.
Yeah.
But they suddenly get this big, they get this big library, and it's a manor house in England.
It's
and
nice.
They've defeated the big bad, and now they're like, what should we do in the future? Mm. And suddenly they're like, how about a boarding school? I'm like, oh, this is going to be, actually what they've done is set up a magic school. So there's going to be new people come in. But then someone's sort of like, oh yes, a boarding school. That's very British colonial patriarchy, isn't it? And I was like, where did that come from?
Very self-reflective.
Now you're very, yes, I'm suddenly very reflective of that. Considering the entire rest of the book, all you've cared about is yourself. It's a whole book about isolation, being cut off from people, power for power's sake, you know, books for book's sake, everything for your own sake, collecting everything around the world. I need this book, I need that back, I want this book. Everything is like books to wear, to mold, everything around them is just, you know, stuff to bring into themselves. They're extracting resources from the world. In other words, like, you know, buying up books, getting to book trading books, protecting their own books, protectionism, like that. And that's what they do at the end. And then they're like, oh, I think what we should do is return these books to the countries that they're from. And
wait,
this guy's going,
different from different countries?
Yeah, well, the books are like written from different places.
Ah.
But hundreds of years ago, and one of the main guys is like, okay, this book's from Prussia? Where are you returning this book to, or whatever like that? And suddenly there's this, like the last chapter of this book, or the last few paragraphs of this book where they're discussing what they're going to be, it's like, you know, like the virtue signaling or whatever the thing is, sort of like being punched in the face by, like, suddenly, it, like, from unearned, out of nowhere, they're like, don't you know that colonialism is bad? I'm like, wait, this whole book has been about, like, you're on the wrong side. Like, and suddenly, like, oh, we should return these books to the place that they come from. It's sort of like, no, you can't do that. That's too dangerous. It's, like, literally too dangerous. It's like, you know, if magic is real and you're hoarding the real magic, which is dangerous, you can't suddenly go, ah, well, you know, what we should do is send these nuclear weapons back to the place that we know confiscated them for. Again, I can't even think of the thing, but like, you're returning weapons, you're returning actual power. That's the reason why we can have conversations about returning museum artifacts back to people, because museum artifacts actually don't have power except in the figurative sense of that they are symbols of something, you know, like the Parthenon marbles, you know, the Elgin marbles, not Parthenon, the Elgin marbles and all this other kind of stuff. They want to send them back to put in the museums in Greece and do this other kind of stuff. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, these should be returned. As symbols, they have power. And you can talk about returning objects back at that being, you know, an empire colonialism kind of thing. But if they actually have power, who are you returning them to?
Yeah. Well, this is, I mean,
this evil wizard has stripped the world of these things and killed anyone else who can use them and is tracking down anyone else who's a magic user.
I mean, in the end, if you keep thinking this direction,
collecting
it all in one place isn't a good idea in the end. Right? Because then, like, you just need, like,
literally just consolidated all power.
They did that. Yeah, okay, they did that.
Into themselves.
Yes, but what they then need to do is separate it and make it.
It doesn't matter. What I'm saying, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be separated. I'm saying nothing up until this point of the previous 13 and a half hours of this audiobook.
Yeah.
Have made me think that anybody in this book has had any thoughts at all about colonialism, international relations, you know, all of the different kind of stuff. Suddenly, they are now literally some of the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah.
They haven't given any reference or any hint that they wouldn't just use that power in exactly the same way that the person previously that they just killed to take the power would use that power any differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, oh, this person, he killed someone. It's like, you killed someone. In this book, you've been killing multiple people throughout this book. Multiple people have died, or in some cases, spoiler, they didn't die, but sort of like, you're either killing people or pretending to kill multiple people throughout this book. And some people do this, and now you're the one with power, and suddenly you're like, and now we're the good guys, and we will signal that we are the good guys by mentioning that our future plans might be problematic.
Are we the baddies here?
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, who am I? Like, what is... Like, what's... And that's why I say, it's like reading a book, not in a foreign language, but just from a mindset which is so opposite to me that I don't even know But I know that the author must think this, what's happening now, is problematic, because otherwise they weren't. It's like the author signaling to people going, oh, I don't know what you're thinking about, that boarding schools are just an extension of, you know, colonial patriarchy, whatever, like that.
Oh, it's like, oh, now I understand also, like, it's the pre-excuse to, like, you know how in the book
it's
Babel,
lampshading, like, the problematic,
like how you have at the beginning, like, okay, I know all the criticism that you're gonna bring here, this is gonna address it beforehand, this is so this is like that, doing that just at the end
but you can't do that after like I say 13 and a half hours of an audiobook, you know. I've spent so much time with these people, nothing about these people make any sense to me.
Okay,
I mean, they do make sense. Is that I don't want to say this, that they're Americans doing American things with American mindset.
Yeah.
But again, that's me being reductive. But like, how can a book like this, like, why is it the only thing that I'm getting out of this book is that I find the imagination of so many authors lacking, like disappointingly lacking in what can happen to a character to be a happy ending, or to be a fulfilling ending. In fact, don't even want a happy ending. It can be a sad ending, but acknowledge the fact that just taking over the power structure of the previous generation and just claiming it for yourself and continuing on with exactly the same actions isn't a satisfying ending.
Well, they obviously struggle at the end and they know that they can't just continue. No, it feels like that conversation.
It feels like somebody else read the book and was like, so what you're doing is setting up a new magic school. Do you understand that, like, in almost every single magic school story, it turns out the people running the magic school are like the bad guys or the not the good guy? Like, it's like every single magic school thing, it's always the magic school has nefarious ends or nefarious means or is like killing children or like destroying the lives of children, or it's all that's what it is. And someone said, you do know that's like normally the thing, and what you're doing is at the end saying, hey, what we should do is magic school. Ah, but not a problematic magic school. And you're like, you can't just tell me that your magical boarding school is going to be non-problematic in the future. Oh, and we're going to, and we've stripped the world's ancient history and culture for all of these magical items. Ah, but that's problematic. So maybe we'll return some of them, but that's going to be problematic as well. So maybe we're going to say it's going to be problematic, but then we're going to have someone saying, but that's also going to be problematic. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just the whole thing is a bit clumsy.
As I say, this feels like a millennial mindset. Like,
does a fish know they're in water?
In the end, like, this is like literally like writing a simple email. You keep thinking, oh, but if I write this, oh, this could be then seen as problematic. So I'm writing this and then that. This is, oh yeah, I can see all of it.
This is American fiction.
Yeah.
Science fiction, fantasy. This is the style.
Yeah.
This is our tall wave squeak, or this isn't exactly, this is slightly different, but it is, there's a reason why there's a whole podcast about this kind of fiction, the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast. What I enjoy about it is that it's so focused on all of the kind of books which now are the successful ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Wizards versus Lesbians. Like, if I said that to you, you could be like, oh yeah, you're talking about the Gideon the Ninth. No, I'm not talking about that book. Actually, I'm talking about the Nine Fox Gambit series. No, I'm not talking about that one. I'm actually talking about the
Justice.
Yeah, Ancillary Justice. No, I'm not actually talking about that. I'm actually, well, that's weird because there's no lesbians because everyone's female. So maybe everyone's lesbian. But then, oh no, I'm not actually talking about that. I'm talking about, oh no, Provenance by Anne Leckie. Oh no, I'm not actually talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, Memory Called Empire. I'm talking about, so there is a reason that there's definitely a zeitgeist of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's successful, and there's a market for it.
Yeah, it so can why be enjoyable. Not? I enjoy some of these books.
It is. I just wish there was a little bit more variety in the kind of viewpoint that comes over at the end of this.
Yeah. But this is why, then, I read Chasm City. And
yeah, well, when we review Chasm City, I want to mention something about Chasm City. Well, actually, let me just mention it now. Oh, no, I can't mention it now.
No,
because I don't want too many spoilers.
But yeah,
once we do the spoiler discussion,
70% through the book.
Yeah, once we do the spoiler discussion of Chasm City, I can talk about how that is different from these. In some ways worse, but in some ways better.
Yeah.
Either way. Let's wrap it up there.
Okay.
I'm going to give this book 2 stars.
Okay.
And I would recommend the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast if you're interested in another science fiction book review podcast, which isn't this one, which discusses one book per episode and is very focused on a specific kind of fiction. And they do bonus episodes where the book doesn't feature either wizards or lesbians. So they right. do talk about other bits. They talked about the Steersman.
Oh, yeah, the Steerswoman.
Well. Steerswoman.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Steersman. Is the, no, one of them. One of them is called. One of them is called the lost, the last, or the steer. One of them's got Steersman in the title, yes. So it's the Steerswoman. Yeah. Yes, I would recommend that. However, just a quick thing: these the don't remember the names, but the Wizard and Lesbian, who are the hosts of the show, mm-hmm. they are very online, very Tumblr, very. I don't know, American millennial, whatever it is, and they often say words and I'm like, I've got to pause the podcast and Google that, and I'll Google it and it's sort of like this term from, you know, the mid 2010s from Tumblr, and I'm like, oh right. Like that. And that happens almost once or twice per episode. I'm like, they're just using language and I just don't know what they're talking about, like, because it's so online, so I know, so Tumblr, so what I was talking about, like the so mental health Twitter or mental yeah. health memes and yeah. all these other kind of stuff and all of the very online, very right on, very up to date issues. They're, you know, right down the middle of that. But
yeah.
again, but as I say, American, they also pick out some of these same issues that I have okay. with this. They're a bit more
reflective.
A bit more reflective,
self-reflective,
slightly more lefty, slightly more world-wise, and can also pick out some of these things. So I'd be interested to see what they say about this book.
Okay, cool.
Right.
2 stars. And
I'd give the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast. That's my recommendation. And this book, 2 stars.
Yes, so that makes sense.
I don't rate other people's podcasts. But like I say, I enjoy the focus of one episode per book, one book per episode.
Makes sense that you do enjoy that because you do the
same. That's the format. And I just wish they put the author in, not in the title of the podcast, in the description.
And what's up next for you? What are you reading?
Oh, what I'm currently reading is, let me go over to Goodreads here. I finished Chasm City, waiting for you to finish that. You said you're 75% of the way through, so maybe we'll get to that in the next few weeks.
Yep.
Oh, Service Model, the new book by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Ooh.
And it's him going, what? Actually, you know what? Just to tie it into this, it's a British author doing what Murderbot could have been mm-hmm. if it wasn't an American author with exactly all the same views that I just talked about here.
Okay.
Doing that, if you know what I mean.
Sounds interesting.
So it's not a Murderbot. It's the opposite of a Murderbot.
Okay.
Who does murder? So the book does open with our robot murdering somebody,
right?
But it's much more British satire rather than American. I don't know what satire is, so I'm just going to do, you know,
isolation.
I'm just gonna
retract,
like what Murderbot comes from is sort of like corporations are bad. Okay, that's a default view that corporations are bad. So what am I gonna do? I'm gonna get all the powers of the corporation with all the same methods with everything else, except the person in charge is going to be a nice woman instead of an evil male CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Go. You know, that's what Murderbot turns into in the end.
Yeah. All right.
But again, I don't know where Service Model is going by Adrian Tchaikovsky, but he's a fun writer and he's doing fun satire here. So
sounds good to me. All right.
I would suggest you read it, but we'll do the podcast about it. I'm not going to wait for you to finish the book before doing the podcast.
No, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's it from us. Become our friends on Goodreads. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Mastodon, which probably not worth it there, but you know, either way, we're in the places.
Yeah.
Go over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads if you want to suggest a book that we want us to read and
or
add it to
conversation with the other listeners.
Yeah, conversations, discussions. Join in with the books I would like to see reviewed thread and just drop something at the end of there. And if you recommend a book and other people recommend the same book, it's much more likely to be added to my to read list on Goodreads. Either way, that's it for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.